Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be looking at a case that, well, it's really about what happens when private businesses get involved with the government and your constitutional rights too. It's Lugar v. Edmondson Oil Co.
Yeah, this one's it's a really interesting case. Gets right to the heart of what happens when private companies can, use state power to do things, especially in something like debt collection.
Okay, so like imagine this, right? You owe money to a company, they sue you. But before you can even defend yourself in court, they get the local sheriff to just take all your stuff.
That's pretty much what happened to this guy, Mr. Luker. He owned a truck stop in Virginia back in the 70s, and he fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. Huge decision, really important implications for anyone dealing with debt collection, creditors' rights, even civil rights law generally.
Wow. So let's break this down a bit. What exactly happened in this case?
Right, so Edmondson Oil, they sued Luger over some money he owed them, and they used this Virginia law. It let them get a prejudgment attachment of his property. Basically, they could get the sheriff to just seize his stuff before a judge even decided if Luger actually owed them anything.
Wait, hold on. They could take his property with no warning.
Yeah, pretty much. It was all done ex parte, which means Luger had no notice, no chance to respond, nothing, before his property was, basically frozen.
Oof. Yeah. I can see why he'd take that to court. What happened next?
So the state court, they eventually dismissed the attachment. They said Edmondson hadn't really, proven their case. But Luger, he wasn't done. He sued Edmondson using this federal law, Section 1983, claimed they'd violated his constitutional rights, due process under the 14th Amendment.
Okay, now that's interesting, because Edmondson's a private company, not part of the government. So how could they violate his constitutional rights?
That's the big question, right? Could a private company like Edmondson actually be considered a state actor just because they use this state law? And if so, could they be liable for violating Luger's constitutional rights? The court really had to figure that out.
Right, because usually the Constitution is about the government, right? Not private companies. This case, though, kind of blurs the lines a bit, doesn't it?
Definitely. And the Supreme Court, they said yes, Edmondson could be a state actor in this situation. It was a huge decision.
So how'd they reach that decision? I mean, there's got to be some logic behind it, some reasoning, right?
Oh, absolutely. They came up with this two-part test to figure out when a private party could be considered, acting on behalf of the state. Still used today, actually, in lots of different legal areas.
Okay, so what are the two parts?
So the first part asks if the deprivation of rights was caused by some kind of state rule or procedure. In this case, it was Virginia's law, the one about prejudgment attachment. That's what let them seize the property. But the court didn't stop there.
Well, yeah, I mean, just using a state law shouldn't automatically mean you're part of the government, right?
Exactly. That's why there's a second part. This one looks at whether the private party basically acted like a state actor. Did they work closely with state officials? Was the government really involved in what they did?
So it wasn't enough that they used the state law. They had to have the state actually helping them do it.
Exactly. Think about it. They needed the court clerk to issue the writ, then the sheriff to actually go and take Luger's property. That's what the court saw as joint participation. Like they were both involved in potentially violating the Constitution.
So the level of involvement from the state is really what matters. They weren't just allowing it, they were actively participating.
That's a key point for sure. And it's not always so black and white. Luger shows us that sometimes it can get kind of blurry, to kind of show that the court, they compared Lugo to another case, Flagg Brothers v. Brooks. In that one, a warehouse owner, they sold a debtor's stuff under a state lien law, but the Supreme Court, they said the warehouse owner wasn't a state actor.
Oh, really? So what's the difference there? Why wasn't the warehouse owner a state actor, but Edmondson was?
Well, the big thing is that in Flagg Brothers, the state just allowed the sale. It was in their law, but they didn't actually do anything. In Luger, the state officials, they were right there involved in taking Luger's property, not just giving permission, but actively doing it themselves.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So it all comes down to how much the state is actually involved, huh?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. But of course, like with most Supreme Court cases, there were some who didn't agree. Dissenting opinions, as they call them.
Right. Always got to have at least one judge who sees things differently. So who is dissenting here? What do they think?
Well, it was Chief Justice Burger and Justice Powell. They were worried that, holding companies liable just for using a state law, even if the law turns out to be unconstitutional, could make businesses really hesitant to do anything.
I could see that. Businesses need to know what the rules are, right? If they're scared of getting sued for following the law, even if it changes later, it could really mess things up.
Exactly. The dissent was worried about too many lawsuits making it harder for businesses to, just function. Expanding liability under Section 1983, they called it. They thought it could be really unpredictable and maybe even hurt the economy.
So we've got this tension, right? Between protecting individual rights, like Luger's, and making sure businesses can operate. Kind of tricky to balance those sometimes, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's complicated, and there are good points on both sides. But no matter what you think about that, Luger had a big impact, changed the way we see the relationship between private actions and the Constitution.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a landmark decision. So what are some of the big takeaways here? What do we learn from Luger?
Well, one of the most important things is that the Constitution doesn't just limit what the government can do. It can also apply to private actors if they're working with the state to take away someone's rights.
So private companies can't just use the state as a shield, basically. If they're working together to violate someone's rights, they can be held responsible.
That's right. And it's especially important in areas like, you know, debt collection, repossession, things like that, where companies often rely on the state to enforce their claims, Luger says. Hey, you can be held accountable.
It's a reminder that the Constitution is not just about the government, is it? It's about protecting individuals from abuses of power, no matter where it comes from.
Absolutely. Luger also reinforces something really fundamental, you know, due process. The fact that Luger had no warning, no chance to defend himself, that was a huge issue for the court.
Makes sense. That right to be heard. Pretty basic idea of fairness, right? And Luger shows that even private parties can be held accountable for violating that if they're working with the state.
Yeah, it sends a powerful message. It's not just about abstract legal theories. You know, Luger's about real people. It's about how their rights can be affected by what both the government and private companies do.
So we've talked about, you know, the two-part test from Luger and what it might mean for creditors and debtors. But how does this actually work, you know, in real life?
Well, sometimes it helps to think about some what-if situations, you know, hypotheticals, see how this kind of thing could actually play out.
Okay, yeah, let's try that. So imagine there's this towing company, right? Private company. They have a contract with the city to tow away cars that are parked illegally. But they're known for being kind of aggressive, you know. People complain that they tow cars even when there's no real parking violation. So say someone sues that towing company under Section 1983, right? They say their car was towed wrongfully. Their due process rights were violated. Think Luger would apply there.
Ooh, good example. That really hits on a lot of what Luger is about. Remember the first part of the test. It's about whether a state rule or procedure caused the harm. Here, the city's contract with the towing company, their rules about parking, that gives them the power to tow those cars. So that part seems pretty clear.
Right. So the city kind of set the stage for this whole thing to happen. But what about the second part of the test? Did the towing company actually act like a state actor?
Yeah, now that's where it gets trickier. I gotta look at how much the city was involved, you know? If they're telling the company which cars to tow, giving them specific instructions, then a court might say, yep, that's joint participation. The towing company's basically acting on behalf of the state.
So it depends on whether the city is just letting them do their thing under the law, or if they're really working with the towing company to do these bad tows.
Right. And if the city knows about the complaints but doesn't do anything, that could make it even more likely that a court would see it as state action.
Gotcha. Okay, we'll switch up a bit. What about, like, security guards? Say you've got a private security company hired by a mall to patrol, you know, keep things safe. But one of the guards uses way too much force on a shopper, thinks they're shoplifting. Could the shopper sue the company under Section 1983?
Private security always brings up some interesting legal questions. Again, we got to look at Luger. That first part of the test, though, state rule or procedure, it's a little less obvious here. We're not talking about a specific contract like with the towing company. But you could say that the state, by, you know, giving the guard a license, letting them use force, that created the situation where a constitutional violation could happen.
I see. It's not as direct as the towing thing, but the state is still involved in letting the guard do what they do.
Exactly. Now, for the second part, we got to look at the security company itself. Do they have policies that encourage using too much force? Was the guard's training bad? Things like that might mean the company shares some of the blame.
Even without specific policies, though, wouldn't bad training for the guard still point to the company being responsible?
Yeah, that's a good point. Figuring out exactly who's responsible can be really tough. And of course, how much the security company works with the police matters too. If the guards are basically acting like deputies, or if they coordinate a lot on arrests, then the state action argument gets a lot stronger.
It seems like each case is really different then. No easy answer for when a company becomes a state actor under Section 1983.
You got it. It all comes down to the details of how the private party and the state are connected. And that's why having a good lawyer is so important. They can help you find the evidence, make a strong case.
So the big takeaway here is that the line between private action and state action, it's not always so clear. If you ever think you're in a situation where Luger might be relevant, definitely talk to a lawyer. They can help you figure it out.
Couldn't agree more. And even beyond just, you know, who's liable and all that, Luger reminds us that these constitutional rights, they're important. They deserve to be protected, even when private companies are involved.
Luger v. Edmondson Oil, it's a case that really changed how we think about the Constitution in a world where private companies have more and more power. It shows us that these protections matter and that they can be enforced even against private companies who are using the power of the state to do things.
It's a fascinating case, for sure. Shows us that the Constitution, it's still alive, still relevant, even in situations we might not expect.
Well, we've definitely covered a lot today. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive for this deep dive into Luger v. Edmondson Oil. Hope this conversation helped make things a little clearer. See you next time. We'll take another deep dive into a fascinating legal issue.